So we're back with Johnny Lewis. You were talking about juke joints earlier. I guess, how do you describe weekends there? How do you describe Saturday night at a juke joint?
Well, Saturday night at a juke joint, that's, as we said earlier, this was an opportunity for the field workers or sawmill workers, whatever kind of work they did, this was an opportunity for them to go out and let off some steam, so to speak. And it was a good time. That's where they went to have a good time. They would dance, drink corn liquor, and if you rub somebody wrong, you got the good fight. So that's the kind of life that the juke joints were about, all about. But the main thing was just a place to go have a good time, do some dancing, listen to some good music.
How often was there live music then?
Not too often. Most times in most of the juke joints, there was basically just jukeboxes, and you listen to the recorded music of some of the blues players or blues singers. However, on the certain occasions, they would have live bands. Now, here in the Delta, it's a little bit different because there were a number of blues players here who played all of the local juke joints around the county. And you start to name or think about some of the blues players that came up around here. You go all the way back to folk like Willie Dixon. You go all the way back to folk like Son House, old Baptist preacher from right over here in Lyons, Mississippi. You go back to people like Robert Johnson, who even from up in Robinsonville, Mississippi, who played all up and down this delta right here in Clarksdale. You talk about folk like Muddy Waters from right out here on Stovall Plantation. That you talk about folk like Howlin' Wolf played here, but he wasn't from here. But there were people all up and down this delta who were good blues musicians back in those days that played. Coahoma Countyans, John Lee Hooker, one of the best, and the guitar, that was their music, acoustic guitar.
How do you describe the atmosphere of a juke joint on a Saturday night?
Festive, very festive, jubilant, all of those words, and it was just a good time. Can you imagine? Well, now I don't know if you've, you had to have been a part of the lifestyle to understand. In other words, if you've been pinned down, with quote marks, all week long, working in the fields, out in the hot sun, and then on Saturday evenings, you got a chance to come out of the fields, wash off some of the dust and dirt off of you if you cared about cleanliness, and many of us didn't. You know, we went to the jukes just like we were, you know. And then you go, and you go to have a good time. And that's the kind of atmosphere that was at those juke joints. I can recall back in the 50s when I first came to Clarksdale on a Saturday evening, let's say from 3:30, 4 o'clock in the evening all the way up to about 10:30, 11. And then they would start to close everything down. You had to get off the streets. But it would be just like that. People would be just like this on Issaquena and 4th Street and Yazoo. And you go around on Yazoo, and that was where most of the jukes were. And on 4th Street, every door you passed, you could hear the blue band play. People dancing, shooting pool, shooting dice, having a good time. Yeah.
Do you remember any stories from juke joints?
Not really stories from juke joints.
Or experiences you had?
Well, to tell you the truth, I've never been that much of a juke joint goer. Mm. I've been in juke joints, but I was more of a professional person. Mm. And I didn't frequent juke joints that much. As I told you, I got my love for the blues by listening to the blues coming from the juke joints in my neighborhood where I grew up. Now, as a teenage boy, there was a cafe in my, you know, in an area where the teens would hang out. But it was owned by a preacher, and owned by a preacher. And we would go there, and we'd play the jukebox and dance and things like that. But it was nothing like the quote-unquote juke joints. Yeah, they were totally different. So I really did not experience the true juke joint life that most of the people talk about. And then too, a lot of what you may read is what people tell you. You know, you read some of the things that people tell you. It's just hype, legend. It's just some myth. Much of it is. But now I truly know that juke joints existed and people frequented them, and they fought in juke joints and all that kind of thing. People died in juke joint. And so there, but I've never witnessed any of that because I just never frequent that kind of place, you know, juke joint.
Do you know what kind of people usually went to juke joints?
Same kind of people I was telling you about, people who...
So field workers?
Field workers, these kinds of folk that didn't, you got people from Oh, well, you got different kinds of people. I mean, you know, black people were no different from anybody else. Mm-hmm. There were certain people who wouldn't set their feet inside of a juke joint. And then there were those who were there every time the door was open. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And then there were those who just every now and then they say, well, hey, I want to just go out and have a good time. And that's where they went, because that's the only place they could go.
So do you compare them to, I guess, pool halls now?
No. Mm-hmm. No, absolutely not. Juke joints were of a different class.
So there's no modern equivalent?
Yeah, today there is a modern equivalent to a juke joint. Some place like Reed's, that's a juke joint. Where else? Well, they're closed right now. Big T, the guy I was telling you about, one somebody you guys may get a chance to talk to. Big T had a club. That was a juke joint. Ground Zero is open as a juke joint, but it's an upscale. It's a bit upscale. there are very few juke joints now, but I would imagine out in the county, places like Friars Point, Coahoma, Jonestown, Lula, probably can find one or two still going, but I don't think you will find much live music going on around there.
What about, heard about Hotspot in Jonestown?
I've heard about it, yeah. I've heard about it. I've heard about the Hotspot in Jonestown, but yeah, I would think that the kind of people that would hang out at the Hot Spot in Jonestown would be more or less upper teenagers and younger people, but not older people. Mm. You know, that's not that. I've never been in the Hot Spot, so I wouldn't really know its clientele, but I would just think that that is the clientele that they would have, let's say from whatever it is, the age 21, is that the age that you got to go in? But I would imagine some of those boys around Jonestown, 18, 19 years old, they are in there. And I would think they would be more or less a hip-hop generation kind of joint, rather than a juke joint. That's just my thinking. I don't know what they do up in there because I've never been. I don't even know where it is.
So when was the first time you really, do you recall the first time you experienced the blues?
No. No. Only thing I can tell you is that I can remember as a boy sitting out on the back doorstep, and I would see the men and the women going to and from the juke joint. And in those days, there were no cars. Everybody was walking. And when they would open the door to the juke, that music would just blare out of there. And I can remember hearing a song like, going to Chicago, sorry but I can't take you. I remember hearing stuff like that, you know, coming out of there. And then when the door closed, you know, you could still hear the lyrics, but they were not as loud as when they opened the door. And in the summertime, when the windows were up and the doors were wide open, they'd be blasting. Yeah. Now, I can recall that, but the first time I experienced blues, no, I can't.
How are people dressed going in?
Casually. And what was casual in those days, like my overalls down there. Oh, faded out overalls, some with patches on them. old flop down hats. That was our attire, and that was casual dress. that was our casual dress. And definitely not our Sunday best, because we saved that for Sunday morning, you know, for church. And Sundays came, we put that old suit on, that clean white shirt, if we had one, and we went to church, all decked out, necktie tied, and shoes shine if we had some Sunday shoes, and most of us did, you know, we had that outfit that we wore, and sometimes, you know, like, you outgrow those, and the pants be up to here, you know what I mean? and the shoes too tight, and as soon as you come out the church, you pull them shoes off, trying to free yourself. Yeah, now that's real. That's what life was like.
Do you remember the first time you met a bluesman?
Yes. And when you say the first time I met a bluesman, I met bluesmen all day, every day, you know, in my life. It's not uncommon for us to say a bluesman. Every man you meet with my skin is a bluesman. He has a blues story to tell. Now, if you mean renowned bluesmen that performed and were recorded and that kind of thing, I guess it must have been maybe like at age 16 or 17, I had an uncle who lived in New Orleans, Louisiana. He owned a hotel, and that hotel was a black hotel, you would have to know, in New Orleans. And whenever stars came to town, that's where they stayed. Every summer, I would leave my hometown and go to New Orleans and work for him to make school money for the, you know, next year. And I got a chance to meet folk like B.B. King, because they stayed there. I met James Brown, and Fats Domino lived in New Orleans at the time. You ever heard of Fats Domino? He was not a blues man. He was more or less a rhythm and blues player. But anyway, folk like them I met back then. Now, as far as Muddy Waters, Jimmy Reed, all of those guys, I saw them when I was in college. I saw B.B. King in college because they played the black college circuit. Yeah.
Now, in our interviews, we've been, you know, talking to people, and obviously, there are, you know, of course, there are thousands of, you know, recorded lynchings or white-on-black violence, but at the same time, there are a lot of disappearances or attacks that went unreported. Did you ever hear about any of these things?
Did I ever? In my hometown, there was a, well, let's say it this way. My grandmother, as I said, would always teach me my place. And she would always tell me what the white folk will do to you if you don't stay in your place. And she'd tell me stories about guys who said something to a white man, said something back to a white man, or did something to a white man, and what they did to him, how the mobs came and took him out of his house. And I, in my lifetime, there was a man who the mob came and got out of his house that night and killed him. They found his body some weeks later. Yeah. So, I mean, that was, hey, that wasn't anything special. That was commonplace. I mean, that's what they did.
People would disappear often here?
Not here. I can't say here, but since I've been here, no. Mm. Since I've been in this, what I'm speaking of is what happened down in South Central Mississippi, where I came from. But now, I can't say to you that I know of anybody that, you know, disappeared like that here. No.
And in McGee?
But I did in McGee, yeah. And that was that one incident. Mm-hmm. But I heard my grandmother tell me many a story about such things, though. Yeah.
That kind of, I mean, that kind of inhumanity, did it, and what kinds of residual effects does it have? And do you still feel the effects of it?
Yeah, of course I do. And anybody, and I don't think you can find any black person who grew up during the time that I grew up that would tell you that that kind of thing didn't have or doesn't have a residual effect on you. It does. When I look around me today, however, and see how much better things are, and I see my grandson, who is 12 years old, and know that he knows nothing whatsoever about this kind of thing, makes me feel good inside, because he will never experience or know what I experienced or heard about. And then take people my grandmother's age. They experienced things that I never experienced. And the things that the degradation that I face here, I knew what it was like not to go over to that water fountain that said white only. I knew what it meant not to go in that bathroom where over the door it said white men only. Colored men. You know. I knew what it meant to be colored, and that was being nice to me when they said colored. Because most times they didn't. They used the N-word. Yeah, I've been called that many a time.
What kinds of things would your grandparents have to go through? Did they ever tell you stories?
Of course. Of course. Beatings. Children's sold away from them.
They were slaves?
Huh?
They
My grandmother's parents, grandparents, were slaves. Or if they were not slaves, they were on some plantation where the conditions were just as bad. They got beaten even on these plantations when they were supposedly sharecropping. They didn't own anything. The man owned them. And by the man, I mean the person who owned the farm on which they stayed. These were, I mean, the stories are out there, and they are real. That's no myth, how my people were treated. It's real. I've known sharecroppers who raise cotton, make bales and bales and bales of cotton, and then at the end of the year, the man tells them that they didn't make enough to clear the expenses, and they still owe him, and he'll give them a few dollars and say, well, maybe this will tide you over. You can come on up to the commissary and get you something, some food, and maybe next year you'll come out better. You know, that's the kind of thing that my people went through.
Did you ever hear stories from your family or relatives about, and from slavery or Reconstruction, or, you know, times or older times?
Did I ever hear about? I didn't quite understand.
Slavery or Reconstruction?
Slavery or Reconstruction?
Yeah, that time period.
I heard all kinds of stories about slavery, and I've heard stories, I've read stories, I've seen stories of movies and things like that, mm-hmm. And the Reconstruction period, I've seen and heard and read about that period of time when blacks began to, you know, try and make it in this society after the slavery was ended. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't, the ending of slavery was the beginning of Jim Crowism. Ain't too much different.
How did Jim Crow affect personal relationships among blacks?
Among blacks, Jim Crowism, how did it affect relationships among blacks? Now, I don't know how Jim Crowism could affect my relationship with another black, because Jim Crowism was the laws and things that were set up that discriminated against blacks. Mm-hmm. And it affected all of us black people the same. And it didn't cause any effect on the relationship between us as black people. It had a massive effect on the relationship between us and white people, because white people use those Jim Crow laws to keep us separated from them. Yeah.
How do you think Tacoma County has become more industrialized or modernized since the 1960s? Or more connected with the outside world? More connected with the outside
world. The outside world. Well, since the 1960s, as I told you, I came to this county in 1957. When I came here, there were factories already here. There were a number of major factories that hired large numbers of employees. And many blacks were working at those factories. However, cotton was still king. And more people were still on the farm and they may call right back too.
If you need to take it, you know.
I've already hung it up. Now I didn't know if that was gonna mess with you, so you can cut that out, huh?
Okay. It doesn't matter.
Oh, okay, I didn't know I could have answered it. Okay. But anyway, cotton was still king at that time. And I can recall as a student getting on the bus going home for the Christmas holidays, seeing people out in picking cotton. So you know cotton was still prevalent at that time. And this was back in the 50s. Hello? Hey, look, I'm right in the middle of recording.
Wow, all of a sudden, hang on. Can we plug this in somewhere?
Right there behind you. See that plug on the floor?
It's like at 130 minutes a minute ago, and now it's not.
Is it turning off?
Yeah.
Oh, geez, yeah.
That's what happened last time. Yeah, it doesn't really give it accurate. No, it'll be fine, because, I mean, it's not like it affects on, you know, digital or something. There's a tape, so.
Repeat that question for me again.
Has Tacoma County become more industrialized or modernized, connected with the outside world since the 60s?
You're at 32 minutes, okay?
Okay.
Let me know when you're ready.
Anytime.
So that's been on.
Yeah. Alright.
Your question was how has Tacoma become
industrialized, modernized, or more connected with the outside world?
As I said, when I first came to Yokohama County, or Clarksdale in general, already had a number of factories. And since that time, however, many of those factories are no longer here. So as far as being connected with the outside world, Yokohama County has had some of your major factories. For instance, Wonder Bread, that's you know, that's nationwide. B.F. Goodrich tires are made here. There is, and they are still in town, so they are nationwide. Archie Daniel Midland's supermarket for the world, as it is referred to, was here. So they've had they've had their share of factories over the years that connected them and gave them a good relationship with the outside world. But here in recent years, as I said before, we've lost many of those factories. As a matter of fact, Wonder Bread isn't here anymore. Archie Daniel Midlands isn't here anymore. However, B.F. Goodrich is still here. We still make, we don't make tires, however, anymore. We just make inner tubes.
Yeah. Why do they leave?
Why do most factories leave? You know, they leave because they move, the company here moved to Mexico, lower wages, and Wonder Bread transferred out to Memphis, and they merged into the plant that was in Memphis. Many of the workers, however, were given an opportunity, you know, to transfer to Memphis with the work, and some of them did, many of them did. Few of them remained.
Have you seen culture or traditions here be affected by, I guess, increased access by the rest of the world?
Cultural. Yes, yes, that being affected by the rest of the world, of course, because, and I would think that because many of the interest in the blues brings many people into Clarksdale. Many of the people who come into Clarksdale because of the blues are interested in other types of music and cultural activities, and because of that their influence, to bring whatever it is that they are gifted in to our city and put on shows and things like that. We've had that to happen quite frequently.
Do you see that as positive or negative?
I think it's positive, quite positive. Because anytime we can connect with other cultures, and give you a good example of what I'm saying, in the city of Notodden, Norway, there is a blues festival that goes on every year the same week our festival goes on. And that city has become our sister city. And every year when our festival is going on, their city fathers, two of their city fathers, and somebody from their blues festival will come to Clarksdale, and the same thing happens from our city. Clarksdale goes to Norway. I've never gone, but each year one of our board members or two of our board members will go, and two of our city commissioners will go. The year I was scheduled to go, I didn't make it because I didn't like to fly. Yeah, but I think it's very helpful to have those relationships with the outside
world. You know, of course, about the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa?
Beg pardon?
You know about the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa? The court that went around after the end of apartheid and heard stories and had mm-hmm. tried to get justice.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think would happen if that existed for Mississippi and tried to get the crimes of Jim Crow out into the open and bring a little bit of closure to people?
Mm-hmm. I'm familiar with that. I can't remember its name, but I do remember that those people, and they forgave all of the people that were involved, and some of the policemen got up and told all. I'm very much familiar with that, but I have not studied, and I don't know any details about it. Mm-hmm. No more than one or two things I've seen on the TV concerning it. To tell you the truth, I honestly don't believe there can be true reconciliation until such thing happens. Mm. I really don't. I honestly don't think that unless we sat down, and I say this in this city, and I say it wherever I go and to whomever I speak on this subject, we will never solve the race problem until we are able to sit down across the table or side by side with one another and admit that we got a race problem. And that I got prejudices hung up inside of me, just like the white man has prejudice hung up inside of him. And until we sit down and get to the bottom of these things and start that, we will never solve our racial problem.
How would you define the racial problems that exist here?
About the same as it is all over the United States. No different here than it is in New York, Chicago, Boston, anywhere you want to go, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh. No different here. You've got whites here who hate black folk. And if you ask them why, about the only thing they can tell you, because they black. You know what I mean? People ain't done nothing to them. And you got black people here who hate white people. And if you ask them why, they will answer you, because they white. There is that inner thing. But now, those may be few. Then you've got people who are genuinely not afraid and love one another, regardless of the color of their skin. I've got people, white people, that I call my friends. They call me their friends. See the wood on this wall? Mm-hmm. A white friend of mine whose wife's parents owned the plantation had about six of those old plantation shacks on the plantation out there. Gave me that one of those shacks, and I dismantled the wood off of the outside of it and put it on these walls, trying to create that old rustic cotton patch look. Yeah. And I call that my friend. He's a white boy. You know, we water skied together. We hunted fish together. We did lots of things together. My friend. Saw his wife just yesterday out at Walmart. I didn't even see him. I heard somebody say, "Hi, John and Lewis." I looked around, it was Teresa. Yeah.
What do you think about the Mississippi flag?
I think it needs to be taken down, all of them gathered up, put in a big pile, and give me the gasoline and a torch to stick to them. That's what I think about the Mississippi flag.
What would you think would be a good alternative?
I think a good alternative to the Mississippi flag would be to take the Confederate battle stars and stripes out of that and put us a big, beautiful magnolia blossom up in there. Since we are the Magnolia State, that's what I think. I think that would be quite representative of this state.
Why do you think so many people still want to keep the flag?
Well, I've heard their rationale, if you want to call it that, for holding on to that flag the way it is. And what they say is they want to keep it because it is a part of their heritage. But then what is their heritage, what I see in that flag reminds me of what that flag represents, or what it represented, and that was slavery, Jim Crowism, lynchings and killings of my people. So when I see what they call their heritage, I call my hell. So that's why I have the hatred that I have for that flag.
Why do you think, I mean, other than obviously, you know, the economic perks, why do you think whites, why do you think whites, like, did that to black people, even after slavery here? Why was Jim Crow existent, do you think?
That's a hard question to answer. Other than hatred, I can't think of any other reason. Why does a man see a black man, say two or three white guys, riding along the road, and see a black man that they don't even know, and they run him down and tie a chain to him. Hook it behind the pickup truck and drag him for miles down the road to his death. I don't know why they do that. Why would they do that other than hatred for that man because of the pigment of his skin? Why would they? I don't know. Other than hatred, I don't know.
Can you think of any cause behind that hatred?
If they say because their forefathers died trying to keep slavery in existence, that's their heritage now, that they of which they talk. Mm-hmm. That's the heritage that represent. Their forefathers died trying to keep slavery in existence, and I guess they hate because it didn't materialize. Slavery was outlawed anyway, I guess. Now, and I'm no psychiatrist or psychologist, I can't look into their minds and say why they hate, but that's just my minute way of thinking.
What do you think about Ole Miss?
Part of that Ole Miss, listen to what you just said, Ole Miss, that's a slavery word, phrase. You know where that comes from? That's what they called the master of the plantation, the owner. They called him Ole Master, and Ole Miss is what they called the wife of the master. So all of that is all of that is the come from slavery. Look at the mascot, the Rebels, their nickname, the Ole Miss Rebels. Listen to their fight song. Look away, look away, Dixieland. Dixie. That's their fight song. You know? Yes. Are you kidding me? That's their fight song today. The band strikes it up every time there is a play on the football field, that's highlighted, you know, a highlight play. Everybody goes to cheering and everything. The band strikes up, and that's what they play. That's their fight song.
And how do you feel when you hear that?
Just like I feel when somebody calls me the N-word. That's how I feel. When I see the flag, when I see my state flag with that federal flag up in the corner of it, I feel the same way I feel when I hear the word, the N-word. That's how I feel.
Good for a couple more questions.
All right.
All right. I don't want to stop you.
Hey, whatever, man. I thought it was going to be about 5 minutes. I'm cool, though. I'm cool.
This is wonderful. This is fascinating. Mm-hmm. It's fascinating, though. It's a pleasure to interview you.
How do you enjoy it? Am I labeling this? Yeah, I got my hand.
How many minutes on each one of those teams?
It's about an hour.
About an hour? And we've been here for two of them?
We've done about 50 minutes on each tape.
An hour on each tape, and this is the third one you put in there.
Might I get something to drink?
Huh?
Might I get something to drink?
No, I don't mind at all. Look, if you want some tea, look right there. That's some green tea. And if you want it cold, you can look up in the freezer and maybe some ice up there in a tray. Mm-hmm. You can get you some and grab your glass up there. Look up in that somewhere. You'll find something up in there. If not, we can get one. Come right here and get one out of here and just wash it now, because they've been up there for I don't know how long. Get one. Just go in there and get you some dishwashing liquid sitting in there and wash it out real good.
I'm fine.
And everything. Or you can get one of these throwaway cups right here. Either one you want.
Fine.
All right.
Thanks, bud.
Sure.
There's also some orange juice if you want some.
You see an ice tray up in there?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
These are good.
Aren't they good, man? I love them. They are very good.
I'm getting back over there, honestly. I don't know, because I haven't seen Leon.
Mm-hmm.